Courage has always been considered one of the nobler virtues. It's something that we all admire, it's something we all aspire to, and lots of people have written lots of things about how good it is to be brave. And here's one. Ancient saying, valor grows by daring, fear by holding back. And here's another one. He that will not sail till all dangers are over must never put to sea. And the interesting thing is that for every noble saying about courage, there seems to also be an equivalent saying that's saying it's not easy to be courageous. Here's one. It's easy to be brave from a safe distance. Or this is Marvin Kittman. I like this one best, actually. If God wanted us to be brave, why did he give us legs? So while we all know what it's like to be brave, well, let's be honest, we all know what it's like to be afraid as well. And being afraid, as much as being brave, is part and parcel of life. Something we all have to struggle with. And we all have to struggle with it on different levels. For example, hands up if you're scared of mice. Yeah, quite a few of you. Hands up if you're scared of spiders. Yeah. Mike, hope you got your hand up. Yeah, thank you. Hands up if you're scared of heights. Yeah. So, those are irrational fears. Like, your brain's telling you one thing, but everything else is telling you something else. My wife's trying to get me to like spiders. She's working on it. She bought me a hot water bottle that's in the shape of a spider, would you believe? She loves me, really. Anyway, you get these sort of irrational fears that appear. If you go a bit deeper, you get rational fears. You know, we've got every reason to be scared of these things. Things like poverty, things like redundancy, things like, well, illness, violence, even pain. I was at the dentist on Friday morning. I'm so glad that's over. I think maybe that I could put as a phobia as well. But so we've got these rational fears. And then at a deeper level still, they're the fears that we don't tell anyone about. You know, maybe a fear of loneliness, maybe a fear of failure, maybe a fear of letting people down or letting ourselves down. And then at the very deepest level, we get what Paul Tillich describes as the big fears. You know, these are the things that we all share. It's something to do with being human. And that's the fear of meaninglessness, the fear of guilt, and the fear of death. So, fear, if you like, is part of being human. It's something we all have to deal with. And it's not the opposite of courage. The two go hand in hand. You cannot be brave if you have no fear. The definition of bravery is when you are scared and you still do something. And it's if you like, bravery and courage is being able to overcome the fears. So that's our theme for today as we look at the story of David and Goliath. Strangely enough, I've never preached on this story before, ever. A couple of weeks back, I was saying I'd never preached about Samson. But today, I discover I've never preached about David and Goliath. My goodness, it's a wonderful story. And part of it is now going to be read for us by Lieutenant Porterfield. She's going to read from 1 Samuel chapter 17, and if you want to follow in the Pew Bibles, it's on page number 288.
Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread to your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. Early in the morning, David left a flock with a shepherd, loaded up and set out, as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle position, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and greeted his brothers. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David had heard it. When the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, 'Do you see how this man keeps coming out? How he comes out to defy Israel? The king will give you great wealth to any man who kills him, and he will also give his daughter in marriage, and will exempt his father's family from taxes in Israel.' David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that they shout defy, that he should defy, sorry, the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down here only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. And the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy, and he has been a fighting man from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and I carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord will be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to it. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in his pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with the sling in his hand, approached the Philistine.
Thank you, Lieutenant Porterfield. Shall we pray? And now may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all our hearts be acceptable in your eyes, O Lord. You are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. If you look back to the beginning of chapter 17, you find out how it all started. It all started because the Philistines had invaded Israel. The Philistines were the aggressor. We met the Philistines when we met Samson a couple of weeks back. We learned that they were people who lived on the coast, the Mediterranean coast, that they were very wealthy, they traded a lot, they had very cultured civilization, they had big cities with big strong walls, and they tended to look down on the people of the interior. They tended to look down on the Israelites. They tended to see them as primitive, as backwards, as ripe for exploiting, as ripe for slave labor. And whereas in Samson's day, relations between the two had been at best uneasy, by the time King David comes along, well, he's not even a king yet, actually, but by the time David comes along, it's open war. Okay? And so they've invaded. It's not the first time they've invaded, and it won't be the last, but they've invaded. And they're a formidable force. Their men are well-trained, their men are well-armed, their men are well-supplied, which matters most. And compared to them, the Israelites are just a bunch of amateurs. The king Saul does his best. He sends a message to all the tribes and all the village and all leaders saying, "Please send a levy. Please send a portion of your men so they can come and fight me and we'll try and deal with this." But the men who come just bring what weapons they've got, and sometimes that can mean a lot and sometimes that can mean a little. They're not very well trained. And among these men are the 3 eldest brothers of David. And so there they are. They're part of the Israelite army, and they're in the valley of Elah. At least the Israelites are on one side, and the Philistines on the other, and there's the valley in the middle. Okay? You got the picture. Whereas the Philistines are formidable, their champion, Goliath, is terrifying. We're told he's 9 feet tall. Even allowing for exaggeration, he's massive. He's huge. I mean, today he'd be huge. Today we'd like him to play for Scotland against New Zealand this afternoon. In David's day, when people were smaller by, you know, because they weren't as big in those days, he was absolutely massive. And on top of all that, he's a bully, okay? He's a bully. And bullies are very good at sensing weakness. They're very good at sort of exploiting people's fear. Listen to the sarcasm in his words. This is earlier on in chapter 17. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man. Have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. If I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and you will serve us." Does anyone take up the challenge? No way. No way. Take him on. It's certain death. Certain death. And total humiliation in the process. So no one rises to it. No one responds. And the thing about fear is it can be infectious. I remember when I was a seven-year-old, I was at a boarding school in Pakistan, and a sort of sicky bug spread throughout the school. And for us boys, we thought this was fantastic. Sicky bug, that means you get a day off, you know? So we're all trying desperately to be sick and do all the things that you need. And some of us succeeded, including me. And I remember the day sitting in the dorm enjoying a long lie when a rumor came and it just spread like wildfire throughout all the dorms. We don't know where it came from, but we suspect it came from the school nurse. And the rumor was this: this sickness is such a terrible thing. We have to really deal with it using drastic measures. So anyone who shows any symptoms of the sicky bug is going to have to get a penicillin injection just there. Okay? Suddenly, we're all desperately trying to show how well we are. It's amazing how quickly we recovered. But I can still remember that sort of infectious, you know, that sense of, oh, it just spread through us all. And we can see it happening today on the battle line. Whenever Goliath appears, people start to panic. They start pushing back. They start trying to get away from him. And it affects all of them, from the greatest to the least. They might be trying to hide it, but they're all affected, and they're all paralyzed by it. No one does anything. So day after day, they see this monster coming towards them. Day after day, they listen to his insults. I mean, what we've got here in the Bible is the censored version of what he would be saying, okay? Use your imaginations. So day after day, they're having to sit and listen to all this stuff. And nothing's happening. And you can imagine, day after day, their courage is ebbing away until there's hardly any of it left. And I was thinking about this, and I realized how you see similar things happening today. Compare the mood today to, say, 10 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago, we thought we were struggling. We're not struggling half as much then as we are now. There's a real fearfulness about it at the moment. And there's lots to be afraid of. These are fearful times. The economies are uncertain. Banks are uncertain. Pensions are uncertain. You know, all the things we thought were rock solid, they're all wobbling. So we live in fearful times, hard times, times when not even Barack Obama is able to solve the world's problems anymore. Times when there's a lot of fear and uneasiness about. Times when we see enemies. Times when things just seem to be getting worse and worse and nothing seems to be getting better. And it's sort of infectious. It's dampening our spirits. It's draining the joy out of our lives. And what I love about today's passage is the way it shows us how, yes, fear can be infectious, but so is courage. So is courage. Along comes this wee boy, David. He hadn't meant to go to war at all. He was just sent on a message by his dad The Israelite army was not well supplied. They had to rely on their families to supply them. His dad calls him in, leave your sheep for a while. I've got this message for you. I want you to go and take these supplies to your older brothers and find out how they're doing. Find out how they're doing. Any parent, you can feel the longing of any parent there. Just find, make sure they're all right. So off he goes. And the thing is, he's not infected by the fear because he's been up in the hills. He hasn't heard about the Philistines. He hasn't heard about Goliath. He just knows there's this big stushy going on. He's been sent on a message. So off he goes. And when he's there, he finds his brothers, and he's finding out how they are when he hears Goliath. And this is the first time he's heard Goliath. And so he hears Goliath with fresh ears, uninfected ears, if you like. And he sees him with fresh eyes. And he's absolutely outraged. He said, how can you let this man say these things? Why are you letting him do this? And I love, we're talking about this on Wednesday, I love the wee exchange between him and his eldest brother. Because isn't it interesting, you know, whenever we're being shown up, we lash out. There's his elder brother. He's been infected with fear along with everybody else. He's paralyzed too. Along comes his wee brother saying, why aren't you doing something? Shut up, he says. Isn't that what we do? You know, when we're being shown up, we feel bad about something. We know we should be doing something about it. Someone comes along, points it out to us. Oh! And David says, oh, now what have I done? I just love that. Now what have I done? And the good thing is that something about David's courage is irrepressible. Even he gets a row from his big brother, he's still outraged. He's still passionate about this. Why are you? And he keeps talking about it. And it's like his courage starts to spread. So soon people aren't talking about Goliath anymore. Now they're talking about David. They're talking about this young lad who says he can take him. And it's like his courage jolts everybody. It starts to remind them what they're there for. It starts to remind them who they are and who's on their side, all this sort of stuff. And it just spreads. You can see it spreading through the ranks of the army. And eventually the king hears about it. Now, the king has been sulking in his tent. He doesn't want to go out to fight him either. He's meant to be doing that. He's meant to be the king. But he doesn't either. So he calls for David, and he brings him in. And they have this conversation. And it's in the words of that conversation that you begin to realize what the difference is between David and Goliath. You begin to realize where Goliath is getting his strength from and where David is getting his strength from, or at least where Goliath is getting his courage from and where David gets his courage from, because they're completely different. Because you see, Goliath, the source of Goliath's courage has been his strength. Oh. And it's been that all his life. And it's turned him into a bully. But if you've ever had to deal with bullies, you'll know this. The moment there's even a hint that they're not strong enough, their courage evaporates. Just evaporates. So Goliath's courage is in his own strength. Where's David's source of his courage? Well, he's just a boy. He knows he's no match for Goliath at all. So it can't be his own strength. He knows that in his own strength he can do nothing. But he knows that God's with him. That it's not his strength he'll be doing anything in. It'll be God's strength. And as I said, that courage spreads throughout the whole Israelite army. Goliath had been reminding them every day how rubbish they were. And they'd let it get to them. Now David comes along and he says, yes, we're rubbish, but we've got God on our side. Why are we scared? And now he goes to meet Goliath. And was he frightened that day? I think he was. We can just imagine it. His heart's pumping. His knees are shaking. He's taking all these deep breaths that you always have to take. He's praying as every step of the way he's praying. But it's that sense of courage mixed with fear, that sense of bravery mixed with excitement, mixed with, you know, This is it. If God's not going to help him, well, there's nothing you can do about it. But he's going to trust God. He's going to give it a go. And of course, we all know what happens. And if you don't know what happens, read the book. Okay? It's an amazing story. And God does not let him down. And yet, I was thinking about this and about the source of his courage. And I realized that there's actually a big question in there. Really big question. You know, there are times in our lives when we all have to face up to evil. And it's obvious. You know, it's the bully in the workplace. The blatant injustice that someone's got to do something about. The wrong that someone has to set right. There are times in our lives when we'll know that God is on our side. And yet there'll be other times in our lives when it won't be quite as obvious. You know, during the First World War, every soldier, whichever side they were fighting for, desperately hoped that God was on their side. Every soldier desperately prayed before they went over the top. As Callum was telling me this morning after 9:30 service, you know, there are no atheists in the trenches. There are no atheists in the trenches. So, I mean, how do you know? How did David know that God was actually on his side and not the side of the Philistines? Big question. We're actually going to come back to this question early in the new year. We're going to be looking at the whole idea of right and wrong and knowing what's right. And it's not an easy question, but here's a way of understanding how David knew that day. You see, faith for David wasn't just an afterthought. God wasn't just someone he turned to when he was facing a big Goliath. Faith was part of the fabric of David's life. When he's this shepherd out in the wilds trying to protect these sheep, all he has is his sling and his God. That's all he has. Faith is very much part of his life. He relies on God. Not just when he's in trouble, but all the time. He's also a great poet. He wrote these beautiful, beautiful psalms that we still sing. We sang one of them just a few moments ago. And the more you read those psalms, the more you realize that there's a genuine faith there. And it's a faith that's grown out of experience. This is the God who he's very, very close to. This is the God who he's got to know really, really well. And of course, the more time you spend with God, the more you recognize his voice, the more you know that you're in tune with him, or you're not in tune with him, as the case may be. So David's faith is his bedrock. And that is the source of his courage that day. He knows God, and he knows God will be with him. And of course, if you read on the story of David's life, you'll know there's times when he messed up. He messed up really badly. But if you apply that analysis to those times, you'll discover that the times he messes up badly are the times when he stops trusting in God and starts trusting in his own strength, when he goes the way of Goliath. And you'll also discover something amazing, not about David, but about his God, that when he messes up, when we mess up, and if we turn back, then God is always there. He's always there. He's always ready to help us start again. The life of David is a wonderful thing to find out about because it's a real example to us all. As much from the highs as from the lows. And throughout his life, he expressed his faith in the Psalms. Here's just three verses from one of the Psalms he wrote. And he wrote hundreds of them, okay? I just picked this one out because I thought it was particularly good. I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer. He is my rock in whom I take refuge. He is my shield. He is the horn of my salvation. He is my stronghold. I call to the Lord who is worthy of praise, and I am safe from my enemies. See, that's the sort of faith that God is looking for from us. That's the sort of faith you get between best friends. The sort of total trust faith. And And the reason God is looking for that sort of faith for us is not just for our sakes. It's because God wants our courage to spread in the world today. As I said, we live in fearful times. There is a lot of fear about and a lot of hopelessness about. And God wants us, just like he used David to spread courage, he wants to use us to spread courage as well. And we can only do that if we don't rely on our own strength, but if we rely on God's. We had that sort of question for David. How did he know God was on his side? But just to finish with, here's a question for you all, and for me too, okay? And it's fairly simple. Is there something in your life that you're scared of just now? Is there something that is making you lose sleep at night? Or not want to get up in the morning? Is there something that is draining the joy out of your life just now? Here's an interesting fact. Did you know that the phrase, do not fear, or its equivalent, you know, do not worry, do not be afraid, that phrase occurs in the Bible 365 times, which, as someone once pointed out to me, is enough for every day of the year. And I'm sure God can handle leap years, okay? God promises that he'll be with us, whatever we face. So, here's what we'll do. Let's just spend a few moments in silence. And in that silence, you can have a conversation with God, and you can share with him whatever it is, if there is anything that you are afraid of. And then I'm going to read out some of the promises from the Bible, and you can accept them and apply them. That is up to you. But let's spend just a few moments in silence now and just have that conversation with God about whatever, if anything, is draining the color out of your life just now.